Welcome to Torah from JTS, a weekly commentary from the Jewish Theological Seminary.
My name is Rabbi Robby Harris. I'm a professor of Bible and ancient Semitic languages at the Jewish Theological Seminary. And this is a Torah commentary for the portion Titzaveh from the book of Exodus concerning the meaning of Aaron's holy garments. Parshat Titzaveh continues God's instructions to the Israelites for building the Mishkan, the tabernacle, in the wilderness. That is the central concern of the previous week's parsha that we call Terumah, and the next three as well, Kitisa, Vayakel, and Pekude, which takes us to the end of the book of Exodus. Altogether, the tabernacle and its accoutrement are the most prominent subject matter of the entire last section of the book of Exodus, comprising chapters 25 through 40. These portions cover many details, the precise explanation for many of which remain somewhat uncertain to this very day. In this commentary, I would like to focus on some of the vestments of Aaron that he wore in his capacity as Kohen Gadol, as high priest. At the beginning of Exodus 28, the Torah commands that the Israelites who are skilled artisans should prepare a specific list of items for Aaron and the priests to wear. These include the breastpiece, the ephod, the robe, a fringed tunic, a headdress, and sash. Let's take a closer look at the way in which the Torah describes how Aaron must function vis-a-vis the clothing items. First, the ephod, some sort of garment. And I quote, this is Exodus 28, verses 6 through 12. They shall make the ephod of gold, of blue, purple, and crimson yarns, and of fine twisted linen worked into designs. Then take two lazuli stones and engrave on them the names of the sons of Israel. Attach the two stones to the shoulder pieces of the ephod as stones for remembrance of the Israelite people, whose names Aaron shall carry upon his two shoulder pieces for remembrance before the Lord. Again, that was Exodus 28, verses 6 through 12. Thus, Aaron is to, quote, carry the names, end quote, of the Israelites for remembrance before the Lord. And later, we shall return to the question of what carrying might mean. Secondly, let us examine another of the items, the breastplate. And I'm quoting now from Exodus 28, verses 15 through 30. You shall make a breastpiece of decision, a choshen mishpat, worked into a design. Make it in the style of the ephod. Set in it mounted stones in four rows of stones. The stones shall correspond in number to the names of the sons of Israel. 12. On the breastpiece, make braided chains of corded work in pure gold. Aaron shall carry the names of the sons of Israel on the breastpiece of decision over his heart when he enters the sanctuary for remembrance before the Lord at all time. Inside the breastpiece of decision, you shall place the Urim and the Tumim so that they are over Aaron's heart when he comes before the Lord. Thus, Aaron shall carry the instrument of decision, the Choshen Mishpat, for the Israelites over his heart before the Lord at all times. Once again, Aaron is described as carrying, in these instances, the names again and the breastpiece of decision. Now finally, let's look at the frontlet, the tzitz, that Aaron is to wear on his headdress. And now I'm quoting a bit from Exodus 28, verses 36 through 38. You shall make a frontlet of pure gold and engrave on it the seal inscription, Holy to the Lord, suspended on a cord of blue so that it may remain on the headdress. It shall remain on the front of the headdress. It shall be on Aaron's forehead, that Aaron may carry any sin arising from the holy things that the Israelites consecrate, from any of their sacred offerings, or donations. It shall be on his forehead at all times to win acceptance for them before the Lord. Now here too, in these verses, 36 through 38, as in each of the other cases, the Torah describes Aaron's function as carrying the item, using the Hebrew verb nasa. However, in the first series commands, the items that Aaron is to carry are physical objects, for example, stones on the ephod, that function in some unspecified way on behalf of the Israelites. Whereas in the last case, Aaron is to carry the sins of the Israelite. Thus, the Torah uses figurative language, a metaphor, to describe sin as though it is a physical burden that is carried. As it happens, imagining sin as a burden is the most typical way in which the Torah describes sin. In later biblical passages, as well as in the vast preponderance of rabbinic literature, sin is imagined as a debt to be repaid. Now, I found that very interesting, and if you're interested in pursuing that, this kind of figurative language that Judaism and Christianity have employed to describe sin, you should take up the wonderful and readable book by Professor Gary Anderson of Notre Dame University. It's called Sin, A History. I wanted to blurb that book at one point and say, loved sin, but they didn't ask me to blurb it. At any rate, back to our story. What might the Torah mean that the frontlet or blossom on the headdress would enable Aaron to bear or carry away the sins of the Israelite, an act that is reminiscent of the function of the scapegoat on Yom Kippur? Take a look at Leviticus chapter 16, verse 22, if you're scoring at home. Thus, the goat shall carry on it all their iniquities to an inaccessible region, and the goat shall be set free in the wilderness. Now, Rashi, the great rabbinic commentator of the late 11th century, had offered the conventional wisdom of the Talmudic rabbis. The frontlet expiated sins that the Kohanim may have committed when performing the sacrificial service. However, while Rashi does see that Aaron bears or carries the burden of the sin that had formerly rested on the holy things, the phenomenology of the frontlet itself is not as clear in Rashi's explanation. Aaron lifts the burdens of the sin, and somehow it follows that the iniquity is dispelled. Nimtza misulak ha'avon. That's what Rashi says. Somehow the iniquity is dispelled. Rashbam, Rashi's grandson, great commentator of the middle of the 12th century, goes out of his way to distinguish his explanation from that of his illustrious predecessor and from every other interpretation that had been offered up until that time. He writes as follows: "My grandfather explained this portion. I too will explain the items in ways that were never explained before." And that's from Rashbam's comment on Exodus 28, verse 6. And in his comment on verse 38, Rashbam attempts to explain the way in which the frontlet functioned. And I quote, "Aaron will take away any sin through the sacrifices. According to its contextual interpretation, or pshat, the verse does not speak about the impurity of sacrifices offered in an incorrect manner. Rather, this is his explanation. Whatever sacrifices the Israelite might bring, whole burnt offerings, purgation offerings, or guilt offerings to atone for their sins, the frontlet will help, together with the sacrifice, to cause them to be remembered before the Holy One for receiving favor on behalf of the Israelites and as a remembrance for them so that they will realize atonement or this purging of their guilt or their sin." Now, to be sure, the idea that a specific priestly implement or tool might help God, as it were, to remember the Israelites during the moment of sacrificial worship and thereby actually work to create the conditions necessary for what we typically call their atonement, which is really the purgation, the purging of their sins, this idea seems antithetical to the way that most of us think about God. So however superior Rashbam's contextual reading of the Torah portion might be to that of Rashi, and it is, neither reading may speak to our religious sensibilities, the drash that we need to carry within ourselves, if you'll forgive the pun, when we engage the Torah with religious yearnings in our hearts. Perhaps another way in which both the Bible and subsequent Jewish tradition have understood the Hebrew verb nasa may help us out of our predicament, even if it does not precisely fit the language of our Torah portion. For this verb that we have translated to carry or to bear a burden may also be to be lifted up in the sense of to exalt or to be exalted. In the case of our Torah portion, as in the case of many of the Jewish rituals we perform to this day, and the Jewish ritual objects with which we adorn ourselves and our homes and dining tables, we know that these implements are not totems or actually power-containing tools that will work on their own. To believe this literally, whether with regard to mezuzot or tefillin or any other ritual object, is to commit idolatry, or in the Bible's own language, quote, to worship gods of wood and stone, end quote. Ritual objects are not sacred in and of themselves. They are only sacred if they remind us to perform mitzvot, to become better human beings, to be more compassionate and sensitive towards our fellow human beings, and to be more truly worshipful of the one true God. To invoke an ancient midrash on one of the Levitical tasks that we see mentioned in Deuteronomy 10, verse 8, the Levites may have been the ones charged with carrying the ark, but it was the ark that exalted the Levites. There are many implications of this alternative definition of the verb nasa, but perhaps the most prominent one for now is we should try our hardest to make sure that the burdens we carry will exalt us instead of weighing us down. Thanks and Shabbat Shalom.
If you enjoyed this program, please rate and review it on Apple Podcasts. And discover JTS's other series by visiting jtsa.edu/podcasts. To learn with JTS faculty in live online classes, visit jtsa.edu/online. And you can get in touch with us by emailing onlinelearning@jtsa.edu. Thanks for listening.